Mics aren't on. Oh, there we go.
We meet each other.
Jessica, my other daughter's wedding.
I don't think I've ever driven that road.
All right. Faith, are we recording?
Clark's a block.
Oh, should I bang the gavel?
Yes.
All right. Randall told me to. All right. I'm going to gavel this meeting to order. Thank you. We're going to get started tonight with our Planning Commission meeting. If you would all please rise and follow me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we're going to get started with our regular items. Beginning with item number one, this is an approval of minutes for our meeting from May 20th.
So moved.
We have a motion for an approval.
Second.
And we have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Sorry, right. Who motioned?
Robert.
Thank you.
Councilman Cox, excuse me. All right, item number two. This is a vacation of a drainage and construction easement.
I object. Daryl Brown isn't here.
Daryl Brown. Okay, do we want to table this item?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to table this item and move on down to item number five. No.
I'm going to stick around for 4, 5, 6, whatever else.
I move we adjourn this meeting.
We have a motion?
That's true.
We like Daryl better.
I do too.
He has a great sense of humor.
He's a lot more easy to work with than I am, because I don't put up with your crap.
Yeah.
You better watch yourself in the parking garage later.
Nor should you.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm glad we have that common understanding, Tom. Randall's not going to put me in contempt or anything like that.
Give him time.
This is a pretty loose meeting tonight. There's no public to digest tonight.
Well, what?
Except me.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We consider you a part of the family.
Poor Ann isn't considered part of the public anymore.
Yeah. Nope.
Okay. Well, we have two items, item two and three.
I'm sorry, who's we?
Watson Engineering.
Okay.
I am Tim Watson, representing
nice
Daryl Brown.
Tim.
I don't know how that works, but anyway, I'm representing Daryl Brown tonight for Watson Engineering for items two and three. We have a vacation of a drainage easement and also a vacation of a public trail easement. And so both of these items are on Cross Hollow Road. To give you a reference, Cross Hollow Road is here on the east side. We have Silver Silo a little bit over here, further to the east, and then this is the City Pond parcel. The city has been working with my client Steve Armbrust on this for quite a while. This is the pedestrian easement. This orange piece is the pedestrian easement that we are proposing to be vacated because there is a new drainage easement that they want to combine with a pedestrian trail easement. So they're going to combine the drainage easement and the pedestrian trail easement into one. That way we can get rid of the orange piece, which is the 20-foot pedestrian easement, and then also the drainage. The only modification we're making to this drainage easement is the construction easement. It's currently shown as a 50-foot wide, and the city has come back and said that they only need a 40-foot wide. So we're just trying to agree to what they've told us.
And it makes good sense to put the trail over the drainage.
Is this where that new commercial subdivision is going?
I'm sorry?
Is this where that new commercial subdivision?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
On where it makes that lake where the pond is, there's a new commercial.
So there's a pond here.
He's talking just south of the...
This is zone commercial. I don't know what the Levitt Land's doing on their property.
Oh, that's Levitt that's doing that.
That is Levitt Land.
I thought this was Armbrust. Okay.
No, sir. That's
okay.
This property boundary right here stops the Armbrust and the Levitts.
Oh, okay.
They did a land swap and a parcel line adjustment several months ago on that. So that's what we're asking for. We do have the new pedestrian trail and drainage easement in place and ready to be. It's been agreed to be signed. We needed to make sure that this gets vacated first. And then we're just going to modify that construction easement.
And that will be underground drainage, right?
Somewhat subsurface. The drainage easement will be the box culvert extension to here, and then this is this section from the angle point to the
open.
Pond is supposed to be an open
with
top.
A trail on the bank.
No, the trail's in the bottom.
Oh, really?
In the bottom. So don't walk it while it floods.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. It's dry 99% of the time. So we're going to utilize that.
The advantage of utilizing that is it gives a way for people to cross the road, not being at grade, crossing at the surface of the road. For those who wish to use that, some people won't wish to use that, but for those who do, it gives them a way to get across the road with a grade separation. So that's the reason for having that trail down in there.
So the trail will continue through the box culvert across the road? Or under the
trail will continue through the box culvert.
That's awesome.
There are plans for an alternate crossing of the road as well for those who do not wish to go through a long culvert. But the culvert would be there available for those who wish to use it.
Nice.
We could call the building.
Okay. All right. Anything else, Mr. Watson?
No, only if you have questions.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'll start with the staff, do we have
okay.
any issues?
So my question, Tim, is the vacation and the new easements, are you working with Levitt's also on their portion of it, or is this only the Armbrust portion?
So we are working with both, yes.
Okay.
The only thing that will affect, if you will, the Levitt's, not the vacation, not the items that are on the agenda, but the new deeds. Yes, they've agreed. They verbally have agreed to those.
Okay. So the intent is that we're running the whole thing through Planning Commission and City Council, and the two property owners would both be executing their portions on the new.
I was hoping just the Planning Commission.
The vacation has to go to City Council.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think we have the deeds from the Levitts already.
The deeds from the Levitts are in your hand?
I believe that's the case.
Okay, they didn't follow my instructions very well because I wanted to hold them until you guys approved it. Because we know that sometimes things get recorded when they're not supposed to.
Well, maybe I'm mistaken.
Okay.
If we have them, we'll make sure we hold them until it's approved.
No, I think we should have a copy.
That's the kids watching the cookie jar. Thank you. All right.
We haven't recorded anything.
Okay.
All right. Commission, do we have any questions for Mr. Watson? All right.
I'll just say one thing. I'm familiar with trails down around Boulder City and other places where this is the case, and it doesn't seem to be a problem at all to me, not in my mind. And there are times you can't go through it, but it's very, very seldom, and it works fine. River Mountain Trail around Boulder, Nevada, great biking trail. Maybe you've done it. There's other places, Crescent Cove, next to Laguna Beach, has the same thing, in California, and it works fine. So,
okay, great. So item number 2 and 3 are both items that we need to, that are seeking recommendation. Do we have somebody who'd like to make a recommendation?
I'll make a positive recommendation on item 1, vacating the drainage construction easement.
Second.
Can I ask a slight amendment?
Sure.
Item number 2.
Well, on both of them, really, just contingent upon the establishment of the new ones, the new easements. That's the plan.
Depending on the establishment of a new drainage easement.
Good point.
And that motion is for item 2, correct? I believe you said 1.
I meant 2, yeah.
Okay.
All right, so we have a motion and a second for the positive recommendation to vacate the drainage easement. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Item number 3. Do we have a motion for that one?
So did you become rich and famous because of your high school CAD class?
Oh, for sure. Yes. I think it was
former student. Very good student.
The teacher's aide for that class.
There you go.
I spent more time in the woodshop finishing up a gun cabinet than I did in teacher's aiding.
Well, fair enough.
Still have it?
Yes, actually, I do.
Good.
That's awesome. So item number 2, do we have a...
3.
3, do we have a...
So we're looking for a motion for item number 3.
Right, but do you have anything to add to our motion? Contingent upon...
Same thing, I would just say contingent upon establishment of any new you know, any, the new easement on it.
Okay, so I'll make a motion to for a positive recommendation for item number 3, contingent upon what?
The establishment of a new easement.
The establishment of the new easement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you for your time.
Thank tonight. You, Mr. Daryl, Watson. We miss him.
Tell Daryl hi.
December comes around again.
Take care, Tim. Bye.
All right. Item number 4, 5, and 6. Mr. Jett, do you want to present from your seat, or would you like to come to the... Would you like to come to the...
We have Eric Keaton present. I need to recuse myself on this particular item.
Okay.
You want me to leave the room?
You or? Stay. Please leave. Okay. this is just a request for extension for vesting for phase 4 of Fort Cedar subdivision that we need an extension on. It was approved in January 2023. We completed the improvements in November, but by the time we got to the city, it was after it expired. You know, had we known it would that there was a 2-year expiration, we would have done it, but we didn't. So now we're here at your mercy.
All right. So when did it expire?
January of 2025, I think. Okay. 15th.
Okay. So you're about 6 months. Staff, do we have any concerns with... I know we've done this in the past, but what are we going to do?
I know in past ones where they've all the same questions always been asked, which is essentially what has changed, right? Because the main reason why we set these time limits, well, there's 2 reasons. One is to get people to move along. And 2 is when someone puts in a completed application, they vest in the ordinances, policies, rules, statutes, everything at that time. So the question always is what has changed? One of the difficulties we have is that most of the time we don't necessarily know what might have changed without running through the whole process again. This one does have 2 areas that we know have changed. I don't know if anybody else found anything else that has been changed. Both of them relate to essentially the same ordinance change, which is the what I refer to as the public improvement avoidance ordinance, the one that prohibits gerrymandering, I guess, of your subdivisions to avoid having to put in public improvements. And so there's 2 changes here that the phase that we're talking about today would no longer meet. Number 1 is they are within the distance of the master plan road that is to the east of this development. And the other one is related to that, and that is he leaves a remainder parcel that is not deep enough. It has to be 200 feet deep to meet our current ordinance. So that's the question that's asked every time on these is what has changed. That is really the biggest set of changes here. This phase would no longer legally be allowed under our ordinances. He would have to, if you look at these, at least 6, 5, 4, and 3, those lots would have to be expanded outwards to include the remainder parcel. So you don't have remainder parcel for nothing. And he'd have to put in his portion of the public improvement for that frontage road.
I would probably say 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8.
That's true, because I think it does. You also have a remainder parcel on that north side, correct?
I mean, 1 possibly meets it, but the other 7.
So, in full disclosure, this is one of the 2 we discussed when we were drafting that ordinance. This one in 4B Ranch, which you guys dealt with recently. When the changing ordinance made them come back as well to put in what should have been put in the first place. Mm-hmm. That one, they're doing it to, hopefully they'll get back to me on the development agreement. This one doesn't have one. If you approve it as is, by granting this extension, you'd be allowing Mr. Jett to continue forward with something our ordinance currently prohibits, just so you know.
Okay. The other thing that I found on this, and I have no idea what, in January 2023, what the requirements were. But I do know that the centerline radius on these curves does not meet our engineering standards. It's only 30 feet. Our minimum standard is 100 feet on that centerline radius. So that does not meet our our current standards.
Is the infrastructure already in there?
Yep.
So there's already road, and it's already, that part's approved as per prior.
And you can meet halfway on that, by the way, because the ordinance that gives the council authority to do this, city council retains the ability to enter agreements which provide vesting rights contrary to this ordinance. When the city council finds the proposed agreement furthers the city's policy of establishing and maintaining sound, stable, and desirable development within the city, and which promotes more fully the objectives and purposes of the city's ordinances. So you could meet partway and say, we see three problems that wouldn't meet current ordinance. You could recommend, the council could vote and say, we're okay with one or two or all three getting vesting rights, but we're not okay with, say, some of the other ones. You can meet partway.
So if we accept this, does that mean they never have to develop the frontage like everyone else does currently? That will just go undeveloped?
Correct.
Yes.
And that is, again, that's the reason why we passed that ordinance, is because they've created essentially a parcel that cannot be developed in a way that would ever require a building permit or anything that would bring in the road. It's just too narrow.
What's your plan with that?
So we put storage along that perimeter, so container storage. So to the north of us is airtight storage.
So there'll be
which has a container storage unit. So, and they paved that road, so we have containers that will line that, and it will be for storage rental.
So how are they?
The original design.
How are they accessing those storage?
From the street.
From the unimproved street?
I mean, they have, there's space there, but I don't know how much.
From industrial or from the other side?
No. This is from the...
Can you pull up
the map? Was dirt road.
Oh, okay.
It's between the freeway and, I mean, there's, 60 feet, 80 feet? How deep is it? 65?
It's 55 feet deep.
55 feet deep, so...
Can you pull up the Google map for that?
That minus the container size. So you got 20 and 40-foot containers.
So is that a separate business? I wasn't aware there was containers out there.
You mean the airtight containers?
Mm-hmm.
Friendly's own that, so.
He's not saying that it's there. He's saying it's like airtight.
Yeah.
Correct. Oh. So airtight, there's one off of Westview Drive and one, where is that other one, tucked back in down 300 or 400 West or something?
No, airtight is out there.
So if you go farther to the north, higher than this, yeah. So they, yeah. So I mean, we're not opposed to saying, hey, we to improve the road or whatever. I mean, I don't think it's going to get improved, but it might. So if you want to put those kind of stipulations, that's fine. But to the north, you can see there's the Brindleys. They have their container things. I don't think they're going to ever want to improve that. You got BZI. But yeah, so that was our idea. You know, we really should have done what we did on the prior phases and just bonded or did a letter of credit for it. But didn't realize that there was an expiration. So, you can kind of see they're not. That's an older picture, but they'll be lined up along that edge. There's, I don't know, between, if it's a 40 foot, then there's 25 feet off the road. If it's 20 foot, then there's 40 feet of space there. So,
is there a dedication on that plat, Kent, on the north side? Did we even get the dedication?
Over here.
So that's the north part. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's part of the
parcel, right?
new master plan road. It was. There wasn't a master plan road, and there was, and there wasn't. So
we'd be riding the pavement.
I don't remember.
So do I understand this right? Currently, this does not meet our city ordinances, but there have been things go in that don't meet the city ordinances. They're there that may set a precedent. What am I understanding here?
So
I'm not in favor of anything that doesn't coincide with our city ordinances.
Right. So when this came in, okay, city approved what is before you.
Because,
and at that time, I don't know about the roads, but the rest of it, what I was discussing, met the requirements of city ordinance at the time.
Okay.
And when, just basic normal case law, they say they get some vesting rights, some ability that even if we change the rules on a midstream, they get to stick with the old rule.
Okay.
But all those vesting rights can have limits. And in our case, the city ordinance back then, as well as now, put a 2-year limit from when it's approved to get your plat recorded. Because our goal is that we don't have a plat that's older that gets to have an advantage and not finish stuff. Correct. We want things to come into compliance with what we currently have.
Sure.
So when we approved this initially, it was fine. If they had recorded it a year ago, you wouldn't have this discussion. We'd just be dealing with a master plan road that'll probably never get finished.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, now, if they had to come back through with this exact same plan, so if you said no on extending, well, if the council says no on this vesting extension request, they'd have to change their plans. They wouldn't be able to build this.
Okay.
So yeah. The times that we have approved these has been that they've made significant progress and they're almost there and the time's almost expired. They've planned all of it out and they have infrastructure in place and they're almost there, right? That's when it makes sense to me is we're progressing towards that. It was the old rule. We're not going to change rule on a midstream.
Right. And I feel like you guys are there. You know, I right?
Yeah, like I say, we finished in November, got it paved and everything, you know.
Yeah, at least with the road, I mean, that's the thing, right? If we ask them to tear up that road and redo it, that's right. Pretty
substantial.
Big.
That's
with the parts with the, what now would be unlawful leftover, if you would, and not finishing the master plan road or doing any of it, that doesn't take them backwards. That just says, okay, now you got to do something that, the ordinance
but
now
it would
requires,
take so. Us backwards.
Well, no, I mean, it would in the sense that it would have cost you money, but you wouldn't
no,
have to
not just
undo.
It would be, if that road became master planned, it would eat up half of the storage units that are, so those storage units wouldn't be able to even be there anymore.
But we're not approving the storage units. Nothing
I,
of what's
I'm
discussing
the parcel
today.
Where the storage units are, it would leave us with 20 feet.
Sorry, let me just ask a point of order with legal.
If he recuses himself, should he be speaking during the meeting?
He's allowed to talk. It would be preferable if he kind of jumped down with the regular, but
I just want to make sure we're doing
it right.
Just
to make it easier. But yeah, so are there effects? Yes, there's always effects when we say you have to follow a master plan road, right? So if they brought in this exact same plan, so there's no history, right? So just imagine we're starting at square one. And they want to build exactly what they're building now. Yeah, our ordinance would prohibit them from doing what they want to do. It would prohibit them from having that space for the storage units.
So is the coke plant next door, it's already developed. They can build there without having to improve it. The one, Jenkins, is across the freeway. It's developed. They don't have to do it. And so you would have this developed road jot out and then in because the rest of that is pretty much developed, right?
And just
from a common sense perspective approach.
Right, and that becomes the question of, can you get them where they want to be, but maybe through a different means, right? So if you do a vesting extension agreement, we get nothing in return. All they get to do is vest and get exactly what they were approved to do 2.5 years ago, right? You could do a development agreement, which is what you've pushed, what we council pushed for 4B Ranch. Not that they'll get back with me, but either way. That at least allows us to say, at some trigger in the future, you now have to put it in.
Right.
Or, and Mr. Jett, you and I have talked about this a number of times, does the city just say, we don't really want this as a master plan road anymore? In which case, it's not a requirement anyway.
Well, that's my question. Do we really want curb and gutter on this one stretch, and
right.
It's not ever going to be on the others because they're developed on both sides, and they don't have to pull a permit.
It's already set a precedence.
And in many ways, that is a better solution than kicking the can down the road.
Correct.
Right.
Because that's the vesting extension agreement right now would do exactly that. It would kick the can down the road and let it be somebody else's problem.
To me, we have a worse situation. where there's just a small strip of curb and gutter and master plan size road, and the rest is never going to be that because you have this going on, and that causes more potential problems to me than if it's all going to be developed.
I agree.
You know, I spent my career reading plans, but I have the hardest time understanding this unless I actually go see it. It's a whole different view if you go see it. And so it's difficult for me to sit here and listen to something for 10 or 15 minutes and then make a decision on something that's going to affect Cedar forever. That's neither here nor there. But I'm not familiar with that, with the specifics of that area. So,
you know,
it's kind of interesting. I wish I could drive out there and take a look at it right now and then come back. So, but that's not doable.
So I see where this. So the master plan roads are the brown dots and the green dots, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. And so the point of those roads are to give access to the other properties, or what's the point of the roads?
Well, one of them is that north-south connection. That's the green line.
Okay.
And then the brown line could potentially open up those landlocked properties back there.
Okay.
So where does that tie in farther north?
It ties in between Kitty Hawk. And,
okay, got it.
I mean, if that went straight to North Bulldog Road, it would make sense.
Except for the view. The angle there for the overpass would probably be extremely dangerous.
I mean, the way that you've got the dog pound there and everything, you can't go straight.
You couldn't, but that would have been my biggest fear, is that's already a fairly dangerous intersection as it is. If you added another direction, we'd be in trouble.
There's a big grade change there.
But, I mean, that may be a better discussion than kicking the can down the road. And I think this is Mr. Jett's thought anyway. He wants it gone.
So what are the odds of us going through eminent domaining through that property and up that way? That we don't have easements or anything there, right?
You've
just laid a line on a map and said this is a master planned road,
right?
And we don't own the property, don't have an easement. We'd have to eminent domain to get us there, which I don't like at all.
Unless we have to have it.
Yeah.
Why do that?
What other options are there for the landlocked properties to have access to roads in the future? If we don't have...
These are landlocked.
None of them are landlocked.
So it doesn't affect...
They all have access roads to them, but they're not...
Okay.
They're not in plan roads.
Yeah. So basically you maintain the roads to get to your property. So airtight storage, I mean, they would never develop that, but... and I don't know some of the other...
So this is where I'm going with my question, is that I'm with a lot of these guys and believing that just because of the lines on the map doesn't mean that it's a good idea. So I don't want to hold you to saying that you have to put in a master plan road if it doesn't make sense. But I also don't want to eliminate some sort of access to some property so that it eliminates the potential for development anytime in the future. So looking at, let's say, this property here. If they develop that property, how do they get access to it?
There's a road. There's white lines go down off.
It's not that there's no roads there. The question is whether this will be a city-maintained road or if it will be a
private drive.
Right. So there's roads. Yes.
This road right here.
Those are dirt roads with access.
This road here goes. BZI uses it every day with their semi trucks and their employees.
Okay.
It's about approximately a 50-foot wide road.
Is it city or private?
It's really owned by UDOT. This was put in by UDOT when the freeway was built. That's according to our previous engineer and Kit Wareham and the UDOT engineer I met with about 3 years ago when we were trying to figure this out. And then there's a full road right here. Here's airtight storage. They have full access to their property.
Okay.
Down approximately a 50-foot road. They have access. The Platts have just developed a couple properties right here. Mm-hmm. They have full access, plus the Platts are going to, from what I've been told, is going to run a road right here also to theirs.
Corey Childs has
a trucking company right here. He has full access right here. Okay.
Right now, he just has access via an easement over city property. There is no road there.
Okay.
There's no easement. It's a trail that people have been using, right?
Right.
Corey did get an easement from the city to access for his trucking school.
Okay.
But that is not something that is a public road that all of those parcels have access to necessarily. And what the city owns and was able to grant an easement across is not a full road width. Through the entire length either.
Mm. So what would be a good compromise to put on a development agreement without kicking the rug out from under these guys? I feel like that they've done their stuff. they've got everything in place, and it makes me sick to think about.
Yeah.
Just, hey, gosh, that's not going to work. You know, you missed the deadline.
Yeah. So first, correct one comment I made on the street radius. That is for a public street. I was not remembering that these are only 30-foot wide private streets. Okay. Forget that comment. The master planned roads, that's certainly an issue. And whether people sitting at the table here think that those are good master planned or bad master planned roads really isn't the issue. That is a master plan that went through study, it came through planning commission, was recommended to city council, and city council adopted it. So at this point, I don't think that it's wise to be making judgment calls about the master plan.
Okay. Not to be contrary, but we also had master plans that went straight up hills with trails, and so, again, the master plan is not perfect, and when you go out and look at the geography, you have to be critical of the master plan. Because it doesn't make sense. We've had multiple situations where you go out there and it's like, why in the world did we drop the line there, right?
We had changes. A trail that went through the Coca-Cola plant.
Correct. We had one that went through, and then we had one that went into the airport runway. So to say that we can't be critical of the master plan means that we can't think or can't change. So I do think there is room to say there may be something better.
And that's, for me, it's a procedural question, right? So if he comes in asking, I want this, and we agree with the reasoning, but we say, we'd rather get you through the proper method, which is to amend the master plan.
Correct. And that's my point, is we need to look at that and say, well, there probably is a better way, and change it, to Ken's point, as opposed to just saying, hey, no, it's gospel, and it is not. Because we've seen that it's not, because you can't make a trail through a Coca-Cola plant.
There is no such thing as a perfect master plan.
Correct.
And when you talk about those straight lines, they don't take into consideration every single contour, but they are a plan to get from A to B. So when I look at this plan, whether it has its faults or not, it is to get north and south and east and west.
Right.
That's how I look at it.
But 2 years ago, wasn't this master plan already here? Or was that changed as well? Because when these guys filed...
No, that change, I think, was more than 2 years ago.
Right.
The change here was his creative line drawing no longer works. Oh. The creative line drawing back then to not build up to the master plan road and therefore not have to put in the master plan road.
So what happens is people would flag...
Doesn't work now.
Yeah.
You know, lot in and not have to develop the frontage. And I get that, too. I don't want to say, hey, we're not going to require everyone to play on a level playing field, because that's not right either.
Right.
It's not.
And looking at the
surrounding properties, you know, just like Robert said, they are not developed, and they probably never will be. So to have these guys just do the curb gutter, you know, all of that, just in front of theirs is kind of crazy, because really, you look at the property before, the property after, you know, they're never going to.
Is there a property anywhere that will never be developed?
So no, it's because they are developed, is my point. Like the Coca-Cola, they've already pulled the plant, they don't have to get one, and so they haven't, they didn't have to comply with the new standards. There's a whole bunch down that road that already have buildings that aren't going to build it to the same spec. And so you're going to have a little narrow strip to one spec, and the rest is just going to go back to what it is.
Right.
That's exactly. More of my issue is it's already developed, and it is what it is, more likely than it's not going to be developed.
Right.
I mean, you could eventually have some type of building permit pulled that would require those improvements, but the odds are substantially lower for a developed lot than an undeveloped one. And that's, again, those are one of the discussions to often have about that master plan change is, do you move it to where it's more vacant ones on there, just go straight up kind of thing, or do you modify what's required and say, okay, I think what's the current requirements, 66?
The Browns 55.
Yeah, so it's a 66-foot wide one. Do you change it to a 55-foot wide, and do you maybe make some modifications to some of the other improvements? That would make sense. But that's a discussion that If you recall, not too long ago, one of our illustrious council members brought through Planning Commission and Council some requirements to do a master plan change, one of the main ones being notifications to neighbors. Right now, we're talking about all these other property owners and making guesses.
Right, and maybe they're depending on that road, right? Yep. Who knows?
We don't know their opinions. Yeah. We have no idea. But if you're going to change your master plan, then they have their chance. If you cheat around that and grant a vesting extension agreement that is now on vesting that's expired, you will never get their input.
So have you guys come up with what you think is a good solution for another place for that, or have you even thought about it? I mean,
are you talking about for the master plan road?
Or? Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we've looked at it. It was master plan, and then it was out, and then it was back in. I guess the question is, you know, is there going to be a quicker way for the public to go from, you know, industrial to Kitty Hawk? Is that going to be a good road for the public to use? Otherwise, it's going to be access.
We'll get touched to at some point.
I mean, 800 West.
Yeah, 800 West is really close to being punched through, right? I mean, it's close.
But Kitty, I mean, I guess my argument would be Kitty Hawk is already a busy road, and someone's going to pull up there and go right or left. I don't know what advantage you're going to have going north to south there. But definitely accessing those properties, you know, those people will be interested. You know, airtight storage, he wants to get, you know, people into his property, but he's not going to want to develop it. Corey Childs is parking his stuff, and Platts are parking their stuff. So whether you decide to do an agreement to, so that we develop that when everyone else does, you know, I don't know that we're opposed to that. I don't think it's going to happen, but we're not opposed to that. And but you know, I don't know. I guess looking at the master plan road, to me, what advantage are you going to get going north and south on that road as opposed to going north on Airport or north on 800 West? Right. Those would be the more natural. The other one's kind of up over, and you're still, I mean, I guess you at least can keep going west after you make that jog.
Well, and from a city cost of infrastructure to maintain that, when it's so, we don't gain a ton of advantage. Our money would be better spent redoing that elsewhere, like the 800 West or wherever, and making it flow better than, you know, you can call it enriching all those property owners by putting a master plan road through there. We just increase their property value at the city's or whoever's expense, right? That has to maintain that. So I see arguments on both sides of this issue.
And you go right through BZI's property, I mean, you'd probably have to condemn that. There's a basketball court right there that they've got, their little place. So, you know, I guess you could, whatever you do to get eminent domain.
Eric, I can't quite hear you.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying BZI has a building right there that you master planned right through it. So unless you went around it or condemned or did eminent domain, I don't know how you'd get through there on that north to south, the east to west. I mean, you at least could tie into that 850 north and go all the way over. So, I mean, that's maybe a different day to address that. But I don't know if the master plan is the best, is a good idea, but whether it is or not, it is right now. So we'll, we don't really want to develop it now, but if you wanted to put in some stipulation that we would do it in conjunction with someone else, I guess we could do that.
And you could definitely tier it, right? I mean, you could come back with the master plan amendment as well as a potential DA if the master plan doesn't go completely away and say, okay, this is what we really think the road should be. Again, I mentioned not because I'm in support of it, but just that it could be 55 instead of 66, which would mean you guys would lose, I'm assuming, substantially less property.
Yeah. I mean, the challenge would be if we did... I mean,
you guys indicated the road's already 50.
It's about 50 feet, right?
So at 55, that's the whole right of way, right? So we're talking a 5-foot difference of what's already there.
It's really not, because it's 50 feet to the edge of the freeway where the fence is on the freeway. So there would have the city would have, that's an irrigation ditch. There would be several hundred thousand dollars for the city to run in. the pipeline, that irrigation ditch and pave over.
All right, I'm just, at this point, one of your complaints was the loss of your property.
Yeah.
So if and again, we're not talking about it today because we don't get to decide that without proper notifications. But let's just say the city said we like the location because it does help some of these partially landlocked properties to make sure they have guaranteed access. But we don't necessarily need an arterial, a major collector, sorry. We just need something through there. But we still don't even need that last 5 feet until somebody else comes in. You could kind of tier that and say, let's shrink it, let's move it. And if it still affects Mr. Jett's property, great, then let's do a DA that holds it till a trigger event.
If we had we would have planned it probably a little bit differently, because we would have made that a little bit deeper so that we could utilize that property. But
and that is the danger, right? Because part of the goal in doing this was to avoid, I'm going to put it bluntly, to avoid that public improvement that you guys didn't think was necessary,
yeah.
Which is fine. I'm not faulting
it. We do have a purpose for it.
Well, that's what I mean.
The storage units, kind of like you see on Coal Creek, where people can just drive up to them.
Right.
To us was a great idea, great idea, especially since there's already storage units there. So.
And again, I mentioned again, there's trade-offs on those two different things, right? So we know of two things that the plan would violate the current ordinances. One is the width of where the storage units would go. It's not 200 feet deep, which is what's required by ordinance now, and the road. You can split the baby. You can say, yeah, we're okay with talking about the road and everything else. We're not okay with this otherwise unbuildable property, or vice versa, or go the same way on both.
Or we could make it a 55-foot road through there instead of a...
Well, you can't do that today, but that could be
right,
the
but that could be one of their solutions, is come back and say, hey, let's narrow this down, and then it's less infrastructure to get through there, which to me is not going to benefit many people other than the property owners that are going to get highway frontage.
If I could chime in real quick, I think, we're kind of spitballing. Does it make sense? Does it not? Does it work? Does it not? So what we would require them to model these changes. I think that's where your answers may lie, right? I mean, the whole model is interconnected, to keep our intersections at, a minimum LOS. And when we start taking things and changing them, we want to see what those impacts are. What does that, if this road never goes in, what does it do to Airport Road? And that's what we would look at in the modeling. And maybe there are some things that could be changed that don't really impact the model. But that's what we would ask.
May I just clarify one little issue here? No one is going to limit access to anybody. We don't have ownership over that road. We don't have, our project doesn't block the road. It's way off the road. So I keep on hearing people talk about, well, we don't want to landlock someone. We can't landlock anybody.
That was my concern. So, yeah. Thank you. That was dispelled. Yeah. Appreciate that.
Well, and if they bought land down there that was landlocked, that's their fault, mm-hmm. right? It's not the city's responsibility to build a road to a landlocked property.
Well, but I mean, if you buy a landlocked piece of property with a master planned road that's supposed to go to it, then and we take it away, that isn't 100% their fault, right? So that's what I was looking
at. But they have done that
but
a
you
couple
see,
times already.
Oh, I'm not saying they haven't. Yeah, so
this very same road.
We should do it again. Yeah.
Wanted to make that point.
Yes, no, I appreciate that.
No one's going to limit anybody's access to any of their property.
Yeah, I appreciate that because that is my concern. I definitely don't want somebody suddenly not having access. But.
And then if we do develop that property at some point and put buildings that require building permits, then we can address it at that point, what may be required. But right now, we're not requiring building permits for just putting temporary structures, just cargo containers on that property.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That road goes all the way to BZI, then that's where it ends. So their trucks come through, the real steel trucks come through on that. Really, nothing comes except for over to Corey goes now over to his property, and Matt goes over to the Platts.
All right. Commission, do we have any other questions for Mr. Heaton? Staff, do we have any other comments? All right. So I don't know where the rest of you sit. I don't know what to do.
So I just have a question. What would you propose as a compromise, or do you want to table this and think about it and come back and say, hey, this is what we think is kind of equitable based on where we're at with our development, or like Mr. Boudreau said, let's remodel that and see if... I just don't think we have enough information to make a decision that's going to be beneficial across the board.
I hate to go against one of my former Boy Scouts, but I'm not comfortable with this unless I get more information, and I'd like to go out and take a good look at it. Maybe with more information, revisiting it, maybe I may have a different opinion, but right now there's just too many ordinance concerns and other concerns, and I'm just not comfortable with it.
Yeah, I mean, for as far as what we propose, I mean, if the master planned road stayed, then I guess we would propose that we would have whatever agreements in place when...
The trigger point agreements.
Right. Trigger point, I guess, is the...
For a development agreement.
Boca Valley, that where we would develop it, so...
Yeah.
Or pay for whatever infrastructure borders our property.
Okay.
And, and this isn't just purely an economic. We would have literally designed this whole project different had this. We made a mistake. We missed the deadline. It was done. I take full responsibility for that. But there's no way this is economically feasible for us to go through and put curb and gutter to make for about 70% of this whole road for everybody else and pave it, that everybody else can be driving over our frontage, and then put water and sewer and curb and everything. It's just not financially feasible to do this.
Yeah, and I think we all understand that.
We developed it. I mean, obviously.
Which means it never gets developed, right?
Right.
Right.
That's the hard thing. I mean, obviously, Tom, you know that, like this, it's been said, that's why ordinance has changed, because you found a piece of property that you found a loophole, and this is where you use the loophole in order to make a project work where, in other words, it wouldn't work. I don't fault you for that, right? Smart people use loopholes all the time. I get it. The problem is now the ordinance have changed, and now we got to find a way to make this jive with ordinance and current. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to do.
We're trying to bring the past and the current together.
Yeah.
It's in a situation.
I don't
want to
torpedo. I don't at all want to torpedo you guys' project. You know, I don't feel like it's ever government's position or responsibility to tell somebody, no, you can't do something. But we got to figure out how to make it work. And I don't think that we have enough information tonight to figure out how to make it work. So I'm going to make a motion that we table this item to the next meeting. So we can have further discussion, and I mean, if you guys want to bring back some sort of idea of what you want, like basically figure out this is a game of, you know, this is let's make a deal. So we need something from you. Hey, we'll give you this, and then we'll see if the city can make that work. But you're not going to get just your blanket extension. I don't think the commission's comfortable with that. But
yeah, and so I guess the question is, what other proposals would we have?
Yeah, and I think that's a great discussion
other
to
than
have.
Agree
and,
to
and
so, develop it if it comes to that, you know.
Yeah, and so I think what you need to do is, I think this is going to be some discussion you're going to have with city staff, because I don't know. So I would recommend that we table this so that you can have discussion with city staff to come to some sort of agreement that you can then bring to the commission, and then we can push it on to city council and get your project moving forward. That's what I'd like to see.
And you've heard generally two suggestions, which is one, amend the master plan, two, development agreement, and or a marriage of the two. That would, those steps, especially the master plan amendment, would actually get us some of that information, both by modeling as well as notifications of the neighbors. Mm-hmm. So that they would be here to express their opinion as well. Some of them may love the idea of this not being a master plan road, but we don't know that.
Yeah, I mean, I like that suggestion.
But you don't know. It gives us a chance to have a different, potentially different input from people who would be affected by this change.
Right.
I'd be interested in the traffic modeling, because we've just increased the value dramatically, and the city cost to maintain that. If it doesn't improve traffic flow much, then why are we doing it? Why is that on the master plan? That's just
and going north south. I guess I don't know who's going to go, what person is going to take that instead of 800 or airport?
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
I mean, it really is an access road to the different properties to get to their own properties, which we're totally fine with.
I can tell you, as you urbanize, it's so hard to see right now. I totally understand.
I mean, we got a huge road.
But as you urbanize, every alternative becomes an alternative, and sometimes a very good one.
But I guess
it's further.
I guess if you go to the point four and then go straight north and you fill in those different sand, Western Rock there.
All the pits.
Quality, all the pits that are 80 feet deep. You know, I just don't know where you're going to go.
There's no good way through there.
I don't care how urban
going through
you
there to make a good way through
that's
there.
Not gonna,
for anybody who doesn't know, this property right here is old landfill.
I'm not afraid, I guess, to look into whatever, you know, when you say urbanization, what that's going to...
Yeah.
I can't imagine any real use besides access to that north to south route that's not direct, or east to west that's not direct to anywhere.
But we have a motion.
Yep. So my motion is to table this to allow the applicant and city staff to come up to an agreement that will be brought to us at our next meeting.
And my opinion is that, you know, really knowing the location and the type of property and the type of property that's surrounding this, I would be for granting the extension just because, I mean, they missed it, and that's unfortunate. But sometimes when you're doing a project like this, it takes time, and there are things there, you know, sometimes, you know, you're juggling a lot of balls and things happen. But this is not a subdivision. It's not residential. It's not, I mean, everything around it is just like it. So to me, it makes almost zero sense to have, you know, to require them to do that.
Yeah.
So what time frame would you request for an extension if we were to do that?
Well, until we're already done with the subject. We've been done with the subject for 5 months.
Done.
We've been 6 months.
So it's virtually done?
It's done.
It's done.
It's paid.
It was done in November. The only reason we didn't do it earlier is because we had, which doesn't really relate to the city, that the power or the sewer and the water and the roads were in, but we had conduit that needed to go in, and the power. We could have went into the city in November or December or January.
So you couldn't give up any land on those. I mean, if you were to give up land on that between your lots and the street, there's nothing left, right? I mean. And so theoretically, you could sell that strip of land, right?
To who?
To whoever would buy it.
That's the problem. They created a strip of land that is useless otherwise, which is the whole reason why
that's
this ordinance.
Point.
But they could, with the council's consent.
It's not useless to us. Only useless if they took away part of our road. I mean, we have a use for it, actually a really good use.
Well, for storage, but nothing that you could actually really build on. Because your separations from anything wouldn't work very well with, 80 feet deep?
I mean,
that's the thing, is there are solutions on that part. That's why I bring that up, is that you could have a slightly different plat that actually extends the properties all the way to the edge of it. They could even still have agreements to put the storage sheds there. There's nothing that would stop that. We would just prevent a mostly useless strip of land from existing.
I would rather see them develop right up to it with the storage units than do nothing. And that's our options
too.
Right now.
Totally.
Is nothing or allow them to continue through with what they're doing.
I
mean, that's...
All right. Listen, I'm going to withdraw my motion. Okay. Maybe I just didn't understand.
I didn't realize they had all the infrastructure.
I didn't realize you were
it's
done.
It's done.
Oh, yeah.
It's done.
You know, I'm going to make a motion for
sick.
A positive recommendation for an extension to the... vesting or for the vesting extension.
For how many?
For how long? Period?
1 year.
Oh.
Please don't take that long.
No.
It's already done, so.
It's done.
If they, you take a need, year, do they, not bring this back.
They seriously need a minute.
I mean, it did take 4 months to get to, which was too slow anyway, but from the time that we had it completed before it actually got to the city. But yeah, we've had it done. We had it done 2 months before the expiration.
All right.
And I'm going to second that.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to approve the vesting extension for 1 year. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Nay.
All right. There you go.
Thank you.
All right. City Council can fight over that one. No. Mr. Jett, I just wanted to make sure there wasn't any look of impropriety by you.
Tom.
So I appreciate you stepping down.
The next one's you as well. See, the next one is on you as well. So you may want to just stay down here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
All right.
If they didn't have the infrastructure.
Okay, so we're going to move forward. Mr. Melling, have fun with that at City Council. Item number five, this is a public hearing for development agreement 478 East, 3325 South. Mr. Jett.
Good evening. This has been before the board before. I hope I don't get emotional like I acted like before. This is a piece of property.
I'm just going to say this. You apologized for that, but I didn't see any concerns. I saw no problems. So,
or as I
found
say,
out the hard way that referees can hear me the length of a football
allowed.
Field, so you were fine.
Yeah.
So.
It passion's is personal. We approve. It's your property.
Yeah. And I've got a lot of pressure. My wife's telling me she's going to kill me if I don't build her a home there.
Happy wife, happy life.
That's exactly it. This property is over as commonly referred to as Dogtown. He, of course, knows where Dogtown is.
It's a cool part of town.
Yep.
Get that canyon breeze.
There is a small dirt road, which is 325 South, that is east of 400 East. Many of you probably know where it is. I know she knows where it is. She has a property on that.
I do.
On that. Same street. Is this the development agreement for the utilities? The improvements, or is this the vacate that we're doing right now?
It's the development agreement.
Okay.
The development. So, I just pulled up the vacation map just so people can get a picture of what we're talking about.
Oh, okay. Okay. I just want to make sure I'm not bouncing around here. Our home is going to go right here. We're asking to waive the curb and gutter on this. There is curb and gutter on Jennifer Davis's property from here to approximately right here, and there's no curb and gutter. Then there's curb and gutter from here to approximately right here.
Tom, can I pause you for a second?
Please.
And I should have bring it up as quick as I can, and I had kind of forgotten until you just said it. You may not have a quorum to address this issue.
Because of me?
You have a conflict.
I probably do.
Well, that's a good point. Because
you have a direct financial interest in the decision being made, so
right.
We only have three members of the board today that could address this issue legally, so you don't have a quorum. Sorry.
Can I sleep at your house tonight?
Tom, I was going to vote for you, just so you know.
So... why does Jennifer have a conflict?
Because the decision on what improvements or not improvements are made on your road may directly affect her property.
How? Because my property, the improvements would be from this to here. It's not even adjoining her property.
You're actually required to have 24 feet of asphalt from the nearest improved road to get to yours.
From the nearest...
Right? Am I wrong on that one?
So you mean I'd have to have 24 feet of asphalt from 400?
That's what we've done everywhere else.
Well, that would just be a minimum access road.
Right.
It's not just in front of your own lot?
think it's 20. Now, you have to have an access road to yours. So think of all the properties up next to the golf course.
Yeah.
The road that goes from Main Street all the way up there, I was just asphalt. That's the access road that we required for them to put in.
I think it's...
But it'd be a minimum size requirement.
Yeah, it's absolutely minimal, but it's absolutely something that could financially...
I believe that's 26. I'd have to look at the engineering standards.
So you, so to clarify, I would have to do all of 325, not just what's in front of my property.
Is it all dirt?
Yeah.
All dirt.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want to say all because you wouldn't have to do curb, gutter, sidewalk. That part's but you'd not in front of you. You would have to do the minimum, which I thought was 24, but it might be 26.
So I'd have just to improve this gentleman's lot also. So he, so would
well,
he
build
on his?
Well, you'd probably do it right down the middle.
Isn't there well, pavement in front of your house?
You'd have to do just
he
the...
He doesn't own that corner.
I don't own this corner.
Yeah,
so
that's...
he owns up there.
So I'd have to improve his frontage also.
Yep.
And again, I emphasize it's just the access road part, right?
Well,
if someone wants
that.
To build a house or a subdivision and it's half a mile away from the nearest improved road, we don't just say, hey, don't worry about getting there. It's fine if you have curb, gutter, and sidewalk and road in front of your property.
Well, the road
we still require an access road to get people
But he
there.
Could do non-curb gutter, and it could be chip seal access to and then developed out curb gutter if you were to do the order.
I would expect so. It's okay. Just a standard asphalt. And again, if you drive up to all the homes up next to the golf course and you take that lovely little route that goes up there, that's what you get. You just get that very minimal asphalt to get people there.
Well, it's not minimal. The road, if everything goes correct, will be 45 feet wide.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You would not have to do full width.
No, I'd have to do all but 12 feet of it. No, all the 8 feet of it. I'd have to do, if the road is 45.
You'd have to do better on what?
You'd have to do
26. No, but the asphalt, I'd have to go, if it's 45, I'd have to go.
So, Tom, sorry.
Okay.
You're getting lost in the weeds here.
I am.
The only concern that we have is that whether or not Jennifer can vote.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't know that other
so
issue.
The because there is an ordinance that would say that to build on your lot, you'd have to improve that access road. That would improve Jennifer's property.
Okay.
Which legal is telling us that would create a conflict for her.
Okay. Now,
I will always side with legal because I don't want to get sued, and Jennifer doesn't want to get sued. So we're going to side with that and say that you don't have a quorum tonight for this.
Okay.
But we're not telling you no.
Do I have
We're just telling you that you are unfortunately going to go tell your wife that you didn't get to vote on this. And we're sorry. But it's his fault.
It's his fault.
It's my fault.
Or
not like 20 years ago.
Or Jim's fault.
Or Jim's
I'm to blame
fault.
For lots of things, but this is not on me.
No, this is not. I'm not pointing at you. I'm pointing at this Jim, empty
okay.
chair.
At John's seat.
Yes, this that John's empty fault. Chair and that empty
yeah,
chair.
It's
their
here.
Faults.
So,
but,
so I guess we should go to the next.
So, unfortunately, yes. We're gonna have to what table?
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna have to table item number 5. Due to not having a quorum for that item.
Okay.
All right. Item number 6 is a public hearing for a road vacation. This is 300 East. Does this apply to the same thing, though?
Mm-hmm. It may lead there. I'm trying to remember if Mr. Jett requested just in front of his property, because I think you did, didn't
yes.
you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
the difficulty comes to the city is do you consider vacating only in front of his, going back to Mr. Cox's point about in, out. So the request itself is not a conflict, but if the board is
okay.
only inclined to consider it if
based on the other,
then you've just found
okay.
a conflict.
All right. So I'm going to ask the board if we can focus on just this piece in front of his property, then we can have a discussion. But if we can't, then we're gonna have to table it as well.
A squirrel.
What focus?
I think we should cover
okay.
both together.
All right. So, in your opinion, we should.
I think we should cover them both together when we have a quorum.
Okay.
They kind of tie together. I agree.
Okay. All right. So, unfortunately, we're going to table this item as well due to not having a quorum to vote for.
Well,
I'm sorry, Tom.
It's okay.
Make sure you do a citizen's arrest of your other board members.
No,
sure
I don't want the perception in.
No, and none of us want that. And all of us understand that we're all trying to do, you know. The government's work while also being people that live in the city.
Yeah, one just clarification real quick, because these are public hearings, we would ask to put it to a date certain so we don't have to republish and do all that lovely stuff.
Okay.
So unless we've heard other rumors, next meeting?
Next meeting.
That work for you?
Well, no,
this was published as a public hearing, but because they can't do anything, we need to reschedule the public hearing. But if we do it to a date certain, so the next meeting on the 17th?
Yes.
Well, I don't have to do anything.
So that you don't have to
renotice. Correct. But we don't want to have to do more either.
I get it.
All right. Mr. Jett, please take your seat back with the board or the commission. Thank you, sir. All right. We are now entering the Tyler Melling Show, or segment of the night. All right. Mr. Melling, you have some ordinance text amendments you'd like to propose?
Yes. Tyler Melling, tonight on behalf of Cottonwood Hollow, LLC. We really just have one very simple request, but because we were going to be opening the fence ordinance anyway, in talking with staff, there were quite a few other things that needed discussion. So before we get into the weeds, what we're in the process of doing, the old Hershey Farm, north of Gemini Meadows, it's a little 8-acre subdivision, I think it's 37 single family units and 32 townhome units. So it's kind of a hybrid public subdivision and private development. In looking at that and then experience with some of the other units in that area, there's a lot of clay in the soil, which means as it gets wet and then dries out, the soil moves a little bit, which when it comes to masonry walls isn't exactly ideal. So especially because part of this is a public subdivision, an HOA is not going to be maintaining those walls long term. The private homeowners will be. And when you're fixing a masonry wall, the fix is generally in the thousands of dollars, whereas something like vinyl fencing, you're looking at a few hundred dollars for a panel or two and a Saturday and unskilled labor. The current fence ordinance requires that those fences, depending on where they are, either be masonry or a composite like Trex, or factory inserted slats in chain link. So we're asking for vinyl to be added to that. That's really the crux of what we're asking for. However, in opening up the ordinance, there's a couple places where the ordinance conflicts. There are also a few things. If you recall last year, the city amended some aspects of the fence ordinance. One of those was related to changes in density. Some of those changes in density, however, were just based on a gross unit count, not a per acre, density per acre count, so just correcting some of that language. And then since then, we've also found a couple aspects of, especially when you deal with differences in elevation, where there is a wall, but it's on the wrong side of the cars, and then you've required a wall, but the cars still shine on the neighbor's property, things like that. So we could perhaps look at some ordinance changes that way. As we really dive into the discussion, if we can't address all of the aspects tonight, I would ask, just because we are here for kind of one thing and the rest is as a courtesy to the city, if we could get kind of a yes or no on the issue of, do we expand the materials allowed if we require a lot more discussion and maybe tabling some of the nuts and bolts of the when and where's that wouldn't apply to our projects that we're working on.
Fantastic. All right. Well, then with that, we'll start with item number 7. So this is the changing the definition of the site obscuring fence. And that's where you would add the vinyl. Is that correct?
Yeah. And if I may, Chair. And,
yes,
and
please.
Tyler, I don't know if you got my email.
I did.
I just thought we could guide the
discussion.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it might help kind of focus all these moving parts. And it was put together very quickly. So I know you're presenting. But if you want to throw that up, Kent. And
Yeah, so this is the existing definition of site obscuring fence. So there are some areas of the ordinance, like for commercial industrial, for example, that does limit these options further to just masonry. But as a general rule, a site obscuring fence in Cedar City is a fence 6 to 8 feet in height that is either masonry, Trex, or factory inserted slats. The language that I've proposed in the change, I looked through a number of jurisdictions and how they tackled the issue. We could simply add wood or vinyl to the definition. I do like the definition that was, Wilcox, Arizona, and they just defined it as any material and of workmanship to permit vision of not more than 10% of each square foot more than 8 inches above the ground. So basically it allows for the drainage area below, but not more than 10% light penetration above that. Now there's got really creative because it contemplated like living fences, things like that. I don't know if 90% is a threshold we want to look at. This privacy link is a 98%. If we look at arguably one of the nicest PUDs, one of our oldest ones that's aged really well in town is the Three Fountain PUD. That's just aftermarket slats, probably, what is that, Don, maybe 80%.
I've got a picture of that buried in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe 80. It's got a lot of shrubbery and stuff like that.
So it's turned into, and to that point, right, a lot of that fence has become living over time, and the fence itself is just chain link. Now, from a market perspective, and especially with tariffs and some of the issues with steel right now, chain link isn't as cheap an option as it used to be. Vinyl is probably the most competitive. It's about half the cost of masonry to install.
Very good.
I think, Don, do you have... I guess before we go on, is because we'll get into kind of the where and when with some of these other materials, but I guess philosophically, you know, do we see... Would we lean more toward kind of a broad definition that just says, you know, any material that blocks the light, or do we want to be specific as to wood or vinyl, and then if someone else has a better idea and something else that they'd like to use over time, they can at that point lobby for another material.
So I guess my question back to you would be, who owns the fence?
Right. And I'm not aware of any city-owned fences that would be required under some of these ordinances. I think they're generally privately owned. It's just a matter of, is it HOA or individual homeowner owned? And that's where we get into some of these other questions, and those do further restrict depending on the situation. So as a broad definition of what a site obscuring fence is in the city, do we have a preference as to, you know, do we want to name precise materials, or do we want it more broad and based on the function rather than the material?
I could chime in a little bit. I'm not a big fan of having name brands in the zoning ordinance. I think it doesn't need to be there. Engineering standards are different. You know, fencing, it serves many purposes, right? Some of the limitations we have, whether it's height, 30 inches in a front yard, 6 feet in a rear yard, those are impact-driven. Sometimes it's a concern for the neighbors, so you don't bury your neighbors, especially small lots, small setbacks. But as far as the materials goes, if we take impacts out of it, you're more in the land of aesthetics.
Yep.
Right. I think where the aesthetics become more important is, let's say, on a subdivision and you're on a master plan road and the house is back up and you're going to see one long linear fence. And, you know, sometimes subdivisions are small. Sometimes you're looking at a lot of linear footage there. is on those master plan roads, and I'll just throw this out, is chain link one of those things we want to present along those master plan roads? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. In my personal opinion, it's not my favorite. That's my opinion, right? So, you know, as you guys drive around town, you see all kinds of different applications. You know, one I think that looks really great is on Cross Hollow. It is block, but I think one of the biggest things that makes that look nice, that would be just south of what Genpak there, so there's a PUD, is not necessarily the block. It's the landscape that makes that whole area really shine as you drive up and down Cross Hollow. So that's a couple of my thoughts for what they're worth.
Okay. I appreciate that.
So is this ordinance just talking about master, it's not along master planned roads because...
Well, yeah, so there is a part that gets into that. Yeah, so as far as what's on the screen right here, I thought maybe we'd kind of piecemeal it at first, right? So we're just talking philosophically as a general definition for site obscuring offense, what do we do? And then as we get into some of these other ordinance sections that say, you know, if it's industrial or commercial, do we want to further specify? If it's a PUD, do we want to further specify? If it's against a master plan road, do we want to further specify?
So this is only for material of a site obscuring fence where a site obscuring would be required.
And generally, unless otherwise specified in the ordinance. Yeah.
Okay. I'm fine with any material. I mean, as long as we meet the... If it's the site obscuring that's the issue, then you can do that with any material in my mind.
Yeah. So how side obscuring are we talking?
90% or something like
well,
that?
Well, so, yeah, the existing for the privacy link is 98, and I think what they were trying to do, and again, I'm trying to imagine what a council was thinking. This would have been, I know Trex was added about 6-7 years ago. I don't know when the privacy link was added in, but, you know, they were trying to avoid the look of the chain link with the aftermarket inserted slats, and right. So this privacy link is a 98% obstruction. A lot of the ordinances I was looking at, just as a general rule, it was about a 90%, is just because, especially with...
Did you say 90?
90, yeah. Okay. Like with wood slats, for example, or even Trex, for that matter, a lot of times with Trex, you still leave a gap, so there is some light penetration, but it's...
I think at that time, this was driven more by engineering at that time. I know wood was in there. I don't remember if there was anything else or any other exclusions, but I think a big thing in the engineering's mind was durability. Mm. And I remember vinyl was specifically just because of the durability aspect. I know that privacy link is supposed to be bulletproof. You know, the slats don't fly out. I think that was
what do you call it? Privacy what?
One of the angles.
It's chain link with
privacy link. Slats. It's a factory insert.
Oh, that's built into it. That. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then the Trex, I think at the time was seen as durable, although some of those things are pretty thin.
Right.
They've made some really good ones now with more of your vinyl type material in them.
And that is the difference is when vinyl was pretty new for fences, the UV protection wasn't there. So especially in our high altitude, it was pretty flimsy. The stuff we see now is quite a bit more durable. I mean, any fence is going to have maintenance over time. And again, we have an HOA we're working with that there's a fence repair and it took, about 10 months to get two different engineers to agree on the fix because masonry is a different animal. I mean, if that falls over, someone's dead if they're next to it, right?
Right.
Whereas the vinyl or wood, yeah, you have to replace it arguably more often, but it doesn't necessarily take skilled labor to fix it either.
So do we have a situation where a site obscuring fence would be required one lot at a time? In other words, I buy a lot.
Only in commercial settings, usually it's on a subdivision basis.
Okay. So we don't have a situation where we have lot owner A, hey, they can't afford a block wall, and so they're just going to do nothing. And then the one next door, hey, I want a block wall, so I'm going to put a block wall.
On your newer
so the side obscuring is more along a major thoroughfare that's a separate code from just other fencing.
Right, and we'll get into that in just a bit too on as far as how we'll define that. And I agree with Mr. Boudreau. We may want to, I'm not sure we necessarily want to be wed to one material only on master plan roads, but certainly we would want continuity throughout a subdivision.
On the master planned roads, and I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
If it's a subdivision-wide approach, if it's a lot-by-lot, you're not going to have the same people that can afford the same thing, and if they want a fence and a vinyl fence, then
yeah.
They have a vinyl.
I think on your newer subdivisions, wherever the commission and council lands, you will have consistency. Mm-hmm. The older ones, I was going to throw a picture of my old neighborhood. It looks, even though it's not a bad neighborhood, it looks pretty hodgepodge, right? You got wood, block, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, to me, it's more the specifics on the different applications.
Well, if you don't mind, Tyler, let's move forward to the applications.
Can I ask one just thing, though? And this is just as a thought. And I think partly, I don't know how much we enforce it, so it's just kind of a random question. You picture your typical masonry wall, and a large percentage of those have almost kind of a decorative top. It's not a solid brick. It's maybe kind of cross, where about half of it is see-through and half of it is not.
Yep.
Technically, that would violate our ordinance. So if we're going through this...
Because it's you can see through it more than 90%.
Correct, right? So again,
so the decorative.
I've never seen us deny one on that basis, but I am one of those nerds that says, you know, why not have the ordinance say what we actually do? So I'm wondering if we can, you have it where you exclude the bottom 8 inches, can we also exclude the top 8 inches? That would be about a typical brick, right?
I don't see a problem with that one bit.
And the bottom 8 is usually let drains through or some
right.
other
so I figure the bottom's drainage, the top is decorative. Mm-hmm. Those are, I think, pretty standard for a lot of fences that even the ones that we actually have and approve right now.
That's a common sense.
That's an excellent idea.
Mm-hmm. On the next, I think it's the next slide, yes, okay. This is some of the requirements. I had initially, in my ignorance, you know, just anywhere where it specified something like in this with commercial and industrial masonry, just struck it to go back to the site obscuring. However, Don made a good point where it's less about aesthetics with the commercial industrial against residential and more, you know, there's noise abatement, things like that. I wouldn't be opposed to, I mean, again, this is more just a policy consideration, but do we still require masonry there? Generally, that does help with noise. In a limited number of circumstances, it could make it worse. It just kind of depends.
But for the most part, I feel like the masonry, you know, should stand because it looks better. It's a better separation, you know, from the industrial and commercial to the residential.
Yep.
Right. I think it's just it's almost a courtesy thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I see that. So if you ignore that top half, the bottom half is, you'll see where last year there was clarification on when to put this in when there's a change in density. Basically, if we're going from anything but kind of an R1. 3 unit per acre type of approach into any other type of density, there's a site obscuring fence requirement. However, it just stated, dwellings at of 3 or more, but it didn't specify it, you know, as far as density per acre. So it would just be correcting that language there into a per acre analysis. If you recall that this letter C that has some added language, this is an attempt to address a concern that came up, I want to say, a year-ish ago. It was that Rose Bradley development on the north end of town where you had a city master plan trail. And the way the ordinance was written, and I think maybe what they ended up doing in practice as well, is you had a master plan trail bounded on either side by a site obscuring fence for about a quarter mile, maybe more. And the concern then is, well, if you've got masonry wall on either side of you for a quarter mile, if there's any kind of safety concern, there's nowhere to go. And there's no one that can see you or hear you. And so that also ties in with, I want to say it was about 3 years ago, that D.R. Horton project on Cross Hollow, where the back of that PUD abutted to a public trail as well. It was a city trail. And they didn't want to put a big block wall to block the trail. They said, hey, if our people want to just go out of a low fence or some kind of, you know, iron bar fence or whatever and be able to, you know, enjoy nature and see that, you know, some people want the privacy and want the site obscuring, and those people are not going to buy these lots from us. You know, we would rather the ones that, you know, would prioritize access to the trail do that. And it turned out really nice, in my opinion.
Maybe. Yeah, it looks nice.
And and I believe at that time they asked for a variance, which the council granted. So this letter C is an attempt to kind of get after that you wouldn't necessarily require the site obscuring fence. Now, from a marketing standpoint, you would probably want some kind of fence, not necessarily site obscuring, if it's against a drainage channel, public recreational amenity, or and then just borrowing from the PUD ordinance regarding the required common open space. Basically, if it's a nice landscaped area, why block it off?
A grammatical question for you. So
correct it, please.
The last part of it, you have measuring at least 10 feet wide. What does that modify?
That is that modifies the recreational amenity. Let's see, the private common open space area. It's from that ordinance. I know Don hates that ordinance and the way it's written anyway. But it's if you recall when we amended the PUD ordinance and the required open space, in order to make sure that open space wasn't just unusable land, that it was nice landscaped stuff that people could actually use, we required that at least be 10 feet wide.
Okay, and that makes sense. The only fear would be is I fear a court would interpret that last phrase to apply to all three parts.
Okay.
So if you could, we may want to reword that just a little bit, just to make sure.
That's great with me.
Is the main intent of this one, because I was not quite sure, when you do like the D.R., like at D.R. Horton where it backs up against that nice hillside, you wouldn't have to do that.
You wouldn't have to do a site obscuring. Now, someone might still want to. It kind of just depends on what they're selling. But you see some of these master plan subdivisions up north that are along these recreational amenities. They'll have like the little 30-inch picket fence, and that's it.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of a situation where we would require a fence that's not a PUD.
I think you're right. It might maybe only for PUDs.
I think this is probably applicable only to PUDs where we say you have to surround the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we would require it.
Okay.
Well, you could theoretically have it for like an apartment complex because we're talking about density differences.
Right. I guess in my mind's eye that was when you're adjacent to other residents.
Well, right. So if you had an apartment complex next to say an R1,
then it would apply.
Or even an R22. I'm thinking Old Farm, the apartment complex that's
we would require it in that situation.
That would require a fence.
Yeah, and I guess the question is that somewhere we would still require? I would err on the side of if you're gonna have those units right next to that public amenity, why wall it off from? Yeah. I mean, just because you live in an apartment doesn't mean you should have to walk.
Yeah. So a couple of years ago, we did stick an exception in there in the PUD ordinance where they have to come to city council.
Right.
So this would just codify more or less that exception.
Right, because I can't think of a time the council's been inclined to deny that when that was the case, because that's really the analysis we were looking at abutting these amenities, then why shield it?
Where it says public, when you're adjacent to a public recreational amenity of a recreational amenity where the proponents, where I get a little confused too is when we're talking about the private open space.
Mm-hmm.
So are we saying you have to have private open space next to the public recreational facility, or?
I guess what I meant there is if you had that landscaped, nice, private open space
next
next to
Yeah, then likewise, we wouldn't want to shield that from view of the public either.
Yeah.
Okay.
That
okay.
makes sense.
Maybe we could tweak it. I'm not coming to a conclusion, but...
No, and this was, I don't know, like 3 hours of just kind of looking through the ordinance and how can we kind of, while we have it open, can we address some of the things that have been...
So if it's the PUD's dumpster area...
Then no.
We would still want the fence,
yep.
right? Okay.
I think we get too caught up in fences, to be honest. I mean, if you've been to Provo, my nephew is up there, it's very open, and they have a xeriscaped and grass, and there's no fences between. It's actually an open, awesome, little cozy feel in a really tight density community. They're all single family.
I think there's some points to be
really
made
nice,
there.
And I don't know that we need to have fences as much as we think we do.
To me, I would go back to more the impacts and density changes.
Right.
Similar to the commercial versus the residential. And I think the fences are necessary. They jive with our general plan. I can read that stuff to you just on section one there, which I think you are agreeing to a certain degree. On the changes in density, when we talk about units per acre, let's say there was an apartment building next to RNZ zone where we've got our density is, let's say, 8 units per acre, but they are single family, right? So if I've got one lot, let's say, sitting on a 5K lot, technically that's pretty dense. Would we require the fence in that case next to a single-family home? Because that home is really at 8 units per acre.
Right, and the way I read the ordinance as it's currently written is you wouldn't have to put a fence. That it seems that the changes we made last year, and maybe we want to tweak that some more, but the way it's written now, if that less dense property, if you will, is I think it says right there, will not apply when the less dense property already exhibits 4 or more units per acre, right?
Which could be a single-family home.
Right.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. I just want to be clear on that. To me, the impacts are really when your multifamily developments, Cascade Springs would come to my mind, where you start to change more from a duplex, single-family, where your commercial, where your lots, the parking densities, your trash enclosures start to morph more into a commercial nature, and you've kind of touched on this with some of the fencing and headlights and things like that. That's where I think the fencing is more important. We did change it, so we went with use, just within the last year. But so to be clear, if you've got a small lot, small single family lot, and the apartment comes next door, they're not on the hook in this case.
Right. As per the changes last year, that's not part of this proposal, but the changes last year, I think, do away with that.
Yeah. Well, the changes last year would have said if you had, three or four units next to a single family, you would have had to put up the fence. But if we do it based on acreage, right?
I'm sorry, I guess I see what you're saying. So you're saying if it's just one house and not four units, so difference is, I see. Okay, well, so that's a reading. So we would maybe take out that second per acre is what you're getting at?
Yeah, I just wanted to be clear. If I read this, and Randall, you can tell me if I'm off base, but if I had a small lot, like we like to talk about, if I'm on a 5K lot with a single-family home and a single-family neighborhood, and the apartment comes next door to me, and let's say it was vacant before, then that lot is technically at a higher density.
Is it a fence in or a fence
out? So then you probably wouldn't need to do the fence. That's kind of the way I'm reading it, unless I'm off base.
No, that's
I think it's a fence.
Correct. Out. That would be a change. If you're thinking all of your R2-1s, for example, your wording, a wall would no longer apply even if a large apartment complex came in next to it. Versus right now, if you didn't have it per acre, it's just a total of 4 units. Those would all be one unit.
Oh, yeah.
Have to fence in.
Period. Each property would only have one unit.
I see. Okay. Oh, we can take it out. That's
fine. Can I just say this is why we don't let two lawyers discuss something in Planning Commission anymore? Mm-hmm. Ever.
No, and again, my initial reading of that was something different. I was thinking more, you know, overall density, and so I thought the per acre was something we had just missed last year. But now that you explain that, I'm okay taking that proposed amendment out.
Yeah. If I may make just one comment, one of the worst experience I have dealing with our building department, our engineering department, or any other department is when they use the word, well, I interpret it this way. If a sixth grader can't read it, then it needs to be rewritten. So we can take the word interpret out.
Yes.
Because as staff changes and it happens, and this guy said, well, they interpreted this way. Well, they interpreted something different. That's what makes people go bonkers. And so just whenever we're writing this stuff, if we could write it in such a simplistic sixth grade manner that, you know, we don't have interpretation, we can remove it or we can add it, but just make it so everybody can read the same thing.
Right. Yeah, so really then, as far as changes of this page, it would just be the kind of looking at this letter C after Randall can some of the grammar there.
Okay.
To just kind of put in ordinance what the council already grants in variances to not obscure the nice stuff.
So, okay.
Next.
Yep, the next one I think is some photos to illustrate. The next slide.
Why is it not advancing? Is there only two slides? No.
You bored the computer to death.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. And then these were just some photos. I don't know, Don, if you wanted to.
These were just regarding masonry commercial versus residential.
The bottom right hand corner.
That's really
that's
all these
Jimmy
photos.
Jones.
What's that?
That's Jimmy Johns in the bottom right corner.
So you got Jimmy Johns with a drive through.
But I seen it. That tells you how small.
These are the cases.
See in, part of the building.
in my opinion, where the masonry makes the difference. Since Randall won't let me do any CUPs, the masonry fence really comes into play. I've worked in at least one city I could think of when these self-service car washes really kind of started to blow up in Southern California. And I think they're quieter now than they used to be, but, man, they were a major roar. And you see, this case, man, it's angled right at someone's windows, right? These are the types of cases where I think that masonry is important. I don't know how late Jimmy John stays open, but some places are open all night long. And you got that squawk box next to your window.
Well, not only that, but the headlights of the cars driving in.
Yeah.
So
that's why I took those photos.
Yeah, I like it. All right. I think that we should make them redo their wall since it doesn't comply with the ordinance. Top 8 inches.
All right. Next slide.
Next slide.
So this one is to address some of the concerns about headlights. I'm trying to remember now. I think it's been almost 2 years ago that Levitz came through and asked for a variance. I think actually it was a development agreement for their project because they were worried about headlights, and the city ordinance prohibited a fence where they wanted to put it to block headlights from neighbors. We have another one up on the hill. Actually, I believe if you could advance one slide, that bottom right image, I believe, is the one in question in the Fiddler's Canyon area, where that retaining wall meets the site obscuring fence ordinance provisions. However, the headlights all shine on to the neighbor's property still. And so how do we kind of balance? And again, where this is residential, I don't think you need a masonry. I mean, other than being a major health hazard and a huge liability, I don't think it needs to be masonry, but something that shields those lights from the neighboring properties.
Like still the 90%?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so So if we could go back one slide to that language, the proposed language here would be that any property proposing new construction where drive aisles or parking areas designed for more than 8 vehicles, so basically 4 units or more, give or take, are designed such that vehicle headlights will shine onto neighboring property used for residential purposes, shall require the construction of a 6-foot-high side-obscuring fence along the affected property lines or between buildings. Again, it doesn't quite address the differences in grade, which we'll get to later, but, you know, at least here it's stating, look, the purpose of this is to mitigate the light intrusion from the parking lot. So that gives something for staff to hang on to if we want to amend, you know, in some other way to beef that up or whatever else. And then there is the reduction to 30-inch height in the front yard setback areas. Again, maybe we want that to be a little taller. I don't know what that would be. I'm trying to think, like, some of these bigger trucks, 48-inch, I don't know, they come up to...
The lifted F-250?
Yeah, what is that?
This is time for short jokes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we got plenty of those in our family. So so I don't know the best way to address that. I mean, the goal is to have language in there that staff can lean on saying, look, like, we want you to mitigate light shining onto other properties, but without being overly prescriptive either, so that it's... And this is the attempt to thread the needle.
And this would only apply to areas where there's 8 parking spots.
Right. So,
basically.
Yeah, basically higher density projects. Because, again, not all high density projects are PUDs either, right? A lot of them are common ownership, so it's an apartment building or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's not subdivided, so PUD ordinance doesn't apply. So this would be a goal to kind of address that.
Well, this could be commercial too, right? The way it's written.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Commercial parking lots as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So this one is tough. Mm-hmm. I certainly understand the intent. And Melanie, you may want to touch on grading down the road, but when we raise the grade, but like if you go back to that slide, would you go to the next
one ahead?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
One forward ahead. Two. There we go.
In this case, if this was a PED without that big change in grade, you would have had that 6-foot fence there anyways. It wouldn't have never been an issue. Mm-hmm. When we retain up 6 feet, like is the case in some of this, or some spots in this project, your side obscuring is no longer there as we interpret the 6-foot retaining wall. To hide it further, you know, you'd be probably at least adding another 4 feet. You know, so now we've got even more of a prison look going on in our front yards. You know, without landscape setbacks, which I don't even know if I can go there now, with some of the state law changes, it becomes a difficult situation. I don't have a real good answer on this at the moment, but I certainly get the intent. I think what the Levitts did here on the picture to the left of your screen worked out pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've hid that parking lot from all those homes across the street. They've landscaped it nicely, saved a couple big trees out there. I think it serves its purpose and still looks pretty good, you know.
One of the ways to address that is amending, you know, rather than along property lines, that, you know, around the parking area, something like that.
I mean, parking area. I still think your fences, if you're going to go taller in those front yards, should be set back further, similar to what the Levitts did. If we get into retaining situations, there may be cases where if we want additional side obscuring, especially in the front yards, where we want those fences tiered back so we don't have 20-foot walls in our front yards. It's just kind of a lot of moving components on this one. I
Yeah, and that's why I led. I'm really just here for one thing, but while it's open, we did want to have a broader discussion on some of these issues.
Engineering may want to speak to, you know, having these big retaining walls in our PUEs as well.
One thing we just have
it
to
causes
keep...
some headaches too.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Well, in this case, there's only a 10-foot PUE on this townhome project to the right. But in some cases, when we do a lot of retaining in the front yards, our PUEs become unusable. So there's a lot of little nuances to this situation.
Well, just all I ask this body and any other body that has input, keep in mind that we're already pricing out well over half the population in being able to buy a home. And from a development standpoint, and I think anybody that's most people would understand this, the more we force it on the developers, additional costs, the more we eliminate even a larger percentage of people being able to own a home in our town. And eventually we're only going to have the wealthy that can afford to live here. And that's going to be very tough and very sad for our children that want to stay here and take care of us as we get older and not live in our home when they're 45 years old.
Along those lines too, I know when the Levitts did theirs, that was voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
Like we only put that in the agreement because they needed to put it where they wouldn't otherwise be allowed to put it.
Right.
So this is one of those, and I think I mentioned this during the sketch meeting, where you may want to change the word. One, we may want to table it to bring back some more details, but it may be one of those where it's a may, not a shall, mm-hmm. where you don't require it. It doesn't add the expense if it's not necessary, but a developer who is hoping to not cause that impact would have an option to do what a PUD is required to do, which is put a fence 10 feet from the property boundary, but a normal subdivision may be prohibited from doing the same thing. And that was what they ran into, is it was just a single property, so they couldn't even do what they wanted to do. So anyway, just a thought, two thoughts. The one, table it so we can get some more details to cover some of these other areas. And again, don't table everything else.
Just don't, please don't table the vinyl.
Just
option.
Three.
Oh, yeah.
Just that subsection 3 that we could have further discussion on, but let the other parts that it sounds like we have some pretty similar agreements on to bring those back. And then the second one, like I said, is it may be more of a may.
Yeah. Shall. And I'll also add too that in the development community, a lot of the pushback on the fence requirement based on cost is because masonry is so dang expensive, especially on slopes, you know, depending on where it is. And it's a nightmare to maintain, you know, short of an HOA or something like that if there is a problem. By
very expensive to fix when someone bumps into it.
Right. And by opening up other materials, it's a lot easier to put in some of the site obscuring stuff with parking lots and things like mm-hmm. that as well.
Well, I like vinyl a lot better than the privacy link.
Me too.
Which brand though? We got to put a brand.
Well, and
chain link with slats.
Well, and you know, there's the cost and marketability too. I mean, we would like to allow vinyl. Wood is another 25-ish% cheaper than that.
No.
We're not going to be putting up wood because
longevity is not there.
Well, yeah, it's just you need to sell units at a certain price point to make a project pencil, and you know, vinyl's not going to hurt that. Wood, vinyl per unit, you're looking for our project $2,000 to $3,000. Masonry would be $5,000 to $6,000. Wood, you know, the vinyl adds that value, more than that value. The wood, you save $1,000 per unit. You're not, you perhaps lose more than that in value. So, anyway, and it all depends on where you're at. Some places it blows too hard for vinyl. It's just not going to hold up. So it just depends, but anyway, so that's the private parking stuff for drive aisles. One more slide forward is the PUD. So this is one of the places where it specifies masonry or composite. So for the PUDs, it essentially eliminates the privacy link, chain link option from site obscuring. It just says masonry or composite. Where it's residential PUDs, I would suggest we eliminate that qualifier and just allow really any site obscuring fence around a PUD. I know some folks would rather have razor wire, but I just don't see a problem with townhomes myself. But it's funny too, my parents live in a PUD on the golf course. There's no site obscuring fences around that one. That was before the ordinance change, right? And today no one would think, oh, we need to add a site obscuring fence around those lowlifes that live on the golf course, right? No one's,
heaven forbid they have to look at people who live in high density housing.
Right, right.
That's okay. They have 100% chance that's higher insane. Of getting Parkinson's, so it's good.
Yeah. So anyway, so for PUDs, that would be the case. The road one comes up later, I think. And then added in this language specific to PUDs as well, or maybe, Don, this was you.
So isn't Utah a fence-in state?
It is a fence-out state.
Isn't it a fence-in state?
Uh-huh. It's a fence-out. You have to keep livestock out of your property.
Yeah, so if you don't want to see it, then you can fence it out yourself.
Right, right, yep. I think, Don, on this slide, was this added just to kind of bring back that language from the other two?
Yeah, just to show the commission what we've got now. Mm-hmm. Well, so you had added it to the 32.8C, right?
Yes,
and then, so you'd added 32.8C. 6B is what you had added.
Oh, it is there. Sorry. Yeah, you just skipped all the boring stuff that we don't. Okay, I see it now.
So there's some exceptions already there, and this was what I was trying to convey, is we have exceptions when the units front the streets and they have individual driveways. You've seen some of those. We have exceptions when the density is less. That's subject to city council. Open space between proposed building units, that's subject to city council approval. And then geologic features between existing or potential development sites that provide for privacy. I think that was really the D.R. Horton one, where they got the big hillside back there. So those are the existing exceptions. B, kind of, the one that's proposed to be added kind of replaces the geologic structure, right? But or yours is geared more towards amenities, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe that was just kind of my attempt to try to encompass what were some of those exceptions that we already grant. I'm not aware of I can't really think of a situation where we would deny, you know, even though it is a variance where they need to go to council. If it kind of meets these criteria,
don't ask Dave Clark.
Yeah.
Council denied one for him next to the golf course, and he met two of those three requirements, and he's told me that many times.
I do remember that, and I remember disagreeing with that decision, along those same grounds. Yeah, it was.
That was just like a posted rail fence, wasn't it?
That's what he ended up with. So he didn't get a side obscuring fence anyway, because the Board of Adjustments gave him a variance.
Right.
But the council didn't give him this exception. And I don't know why.
Yeah, and I think maybe because the way the variance language was written, it was, you know, not necessarily a geologic issue or anything else, but, you know, if you're next to an amenity, why obscure it? Unless you really want to.
Stop golf balls.
Yeah. if you could, Ken, if you could drop down to the next slide, it has a picture of some of these applications that we've seen. You can see where, you know, that top left, they did have to put up the fence. They actually did a double fence. Is that a drainage area between the two sets of fences?
I don't recall why that was done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought.
I think that's nice.
I had the same question. I don't know.
The way I see it is they put up that masonry fence because they had to per ordinance, but it didn't offer enough privacy in the backyards, so they did the backyard privacy fences too.
That could be the case.
And I could be wrong, but I mean, it was a lot of wasted cost. If it were me, I would have rather they, I mean, and they landscaped it beautifully, right? Let them landscape it, leave it open.
I'd prefer that bottom left one over any of those others. I think it just looks nicer. It's open.
And that one predates the ordinance back when PUDs weren't something.
But we require a fence, and also we have more cost, and I don't think it looks as good. But yeah. I don't think the city should be into aesthetics anyway, enforcing aesthetics. Yep. So.
And that
if
is
people want a fence, let them build a fence. If they don't, then let's not require them to build a fence, except for in some very slim circumstances.
And that is the challenge. So before we had the PUD fencing ordinance, we had developments like that. And then once we required PUDs to be behind a fence, we started to get a work product that deserved to be behind a fence. And, you know, where you're allowed to have creativity, you're allowed to landscape nicely and have the buildings orient the fence, because at the end of the day you have to sell your units, right?
Right.
So you're not going to have something that looks horrible unless the city says you have to make, you have to put in this, you know, $150,000 fence. Then you've got to make cuts somewhere else to have it pencil out, and that's unfortunate.
I agree with Robert. I hate the city being in the aesthetics business.
You'll see the bottom right, I believe that's Three Fountains, isn't it?
It is.
And that's probably the worst stretch of Three Fountains.
Is it? I was looking for chain link, so that's what
yeah, and that is, but in most areas of Three Fountains, the fence
nice,
isn't
actually,
naked,
yeah.
Right? It's covered by vegetation in most of those areas, except for that one stretch. You know, and people turn out okay. My mom grew up across the street from there. Yeah, she worked underage at Taco Time because that's where she could walk. But I mean, it wasn't, you know, it's a nice area still. And that's chain link with the aftermarket privacy slats. That's no longer allowed. I'm not sure, you know, unless steel costs come way down, I'm not sure we'll see that come back ever again, really, just because it doesn't pencil and it's not a perceived nice thing, especially when you have materials like vinyl as an option. But yeah, this is kind of an example of some of those situations where it was either required or where it wouldn't be. And I believe the revisions we made, Don, that bottom left would be allowed again today, would it not?
Yeah, I was looking for that. And Robert, I put that in just for you.
Oh, thank you. I think it looks
actually, I agree.
It
looks,
because there was about a 15-year stretch where that was not allowed.
Right. To me, that's hands down better than any of the others.
So if the porches are articulated toward the street, if you have varying,
can we just continue?
Oh, you want to continue?
Yes, please.
Yep. Sorry.
That is in the order.
He's getting hangry.
I hear you. Let's see. Next one is engineering standards. Sorry, I'm trying to consolidate my notes here.
This is what I sent my wife.
Oh, here we are. Yeah, so there's two spots that this is discussed in the engineering standards. So one of them is in 4.6.1 about allowed fence types. Where the types of fences allowed to be installed around the developments listed in 4.6 above, so like PUDs, industrial developments, things like that. There needs to be some kind of, you know, consistency between the make sure our standards match our ordinance and vice versa, but basically just allowing the whatever we allow in site obscuring fence unless otherwise restricted, like for commercial and industrial. You know, that it would just match. So if we're changing the one, we need to change the other and vice versa. And then the last one that was a little funky is this D6 detail. There it is, right there. So it's kind of buried in there, but I found it just because I was doing a Control-F search through the standards. So it states for detention basins that are city-owned, 6-inch tall chain link fence with 3 strands of barbed wire.
So Constantine wire on top of the fence.
So, and I'm not sure, and it says per a UDOT detail, so I'm not sure if that's something we still want in there or if that's something we want to amend. Either way, as we were working on this subdivision plan with the city, there is some question as far as the way the ordinance and the details are written as to private detention basins, and so we just need to have that clarified that if it's a, whether it's city-owned or not, if there's a site-obscuring fence requirement, and does that standard change based on ownership?
Well, I don't think we should require barbed wire on top unless there's a safety issue, right? Like a sewer lagoon would be one, or maybe well housing, you know, where you don't want
is people that, on it. Would that be, or is that detailed just for city infrastructure, or is that privately held?
It says for city maintained only, but then the question is, what do we do with private? Because we didn't update the detail to show what is the spec for private.
Okay.
So in this case, they couldn't put block wall. If they wanted to, we'd have to do the chain link with the three rows of barbed wire.
And so, and for our project, we would like to just be consistent, use vinyl. It's a privately maintained basin. So.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Barbed wire. Good.
So for me, I am not of the opinion that this government should dictate what material you use for a private project, including your fence. The government has full authority to dictate what material they use for government infrastructure. So I would think that, you know, if the city wants to say we require this for our detention basin, fantastic. But for you, and as long as it, unless for some reason city staff thinks it's a safety issue, which I don't think it would be, but.
No, and generally, part of this is scale, too, right? The city will only maintain a drainage basin if it services more than 160 acres. So you're talking a fair deal of water, whereas, you know, anything smaller than that has to be privately maintained.
Yeah, that eliminated about 99.99% of the subdivisions.
Yep. And I think part of your question as you go through this is it one where water sits in it a lot?
Right. Or it becomes a safety issue, right?
Yeah, there's your safety concern. I mean, you think of a standard swimming pool where they want six-foot fences around them because that's just a standard safety concern.
And my thought, you're better off putting a clear chain-link fence around it so if a kid did get in it...
You can see it.
You can see them, and you can hear them, you can...
Yeah, the barbed wire on this, by the way, is entertaining because we have a city ordinance that prohibits barbed wire in Cedar City.
Yep.
So we actually have an ordinance that contradicts our standard. I at least couldn't find the UDOT standard. I don't know if somebody else did.
Does the ordinance prohibit razor wire? Could we change
it? It says barbed wire, okay, but I think its definition is probably sufficient.
Let's include it. To razor wire. And then,
so, Tyler, are you asking to change the ordinance on that around the retention pond to say
any material?
I mean, I think
to any material?
My gut, and I could be off here, I would lean on staff a little bit. As far as, again, I'm here for our subdivision we're working on.
I get it.
Because it's a private basin and the city spec clearly isn't acceptable, and it does say for city maintained basins only here, I believe if we simply address the materials issue for what, you know, under site obscuring and for PUDs and for residential subdivisions, change of density, all that stuff, that covers our concerns.
So we could be a clear chain link.
As far as...
It does say city, right?
Well, we would want to do it as razor.
No,
as vinyl, sorry.
No, you guys, but... But if we change the ordinance, would this still allow someone to have a clear chain link around it?
I would think so. I mean, again, it depends on this part was more for discussion rather than a proposed verbiage change. I think we would need to coordinate a little more with staff as far as what exactly that needs to say. But I would think that, for safety reasons and other things, especially if you don't have a lot of percolation, sometimes something that's not site obscuring but is secure might be safer. But if it's along a master plan road, is that what we want? You know, and this is kind of a combination this private pond in our situation abuts a master plan road and an existing residential subdivision and our public subdivision. So, you know, we would like to just be consistent. It has a high percolation rate. It won't have sitting water. So it'll be...
I'm not convinced we would be enforcing this on yours because it's city.
And I didn't vet this, so.
It's okay. Yeah, no, you're good.
But the way I read it, yours is private. Do you know what?
Right.
I don't know what we've done on the engineering side with these.
I think the only issue engineering brought up is that they wanted it fenced. But as far as what material, that wasn't specified.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
We would like it to just be consistent and be just vinyl.
Reading it on the surface. And then the previous ones.
So is your retention basin not going to have a top on it? It's just like a French drain, or is it going to be open?
Yeah, it's a rapid infiltration. Right, like right. They so dug more, down like, I don't know, 30 feet.
But it'll have
feet,
grass on top of it, right?
Uh-huh.
Or just landscape or whatever.
Yeah, it'll just be gravel. It's just a big sieve.
So you could walk on it, so it's not going to be like an open basin full of water.
Right, yeah, it's not going to be attractive. And the slope, because of the space we were looking at, it doesn't meet that 3-to-1. It's more of a 2-to-1, which you don't want people walking on. Or
I wondered what that was. Mm-hmm. That's the one out by Fly Nail, right?
Yeah.
I wondered what that hole was.
It's an area of town where there's no master plan storm drain system of any kind, but there's good gravel layers 20 to 30 feet down.
Right.
So you just dig down to that, backfill it with boulders. You leave about a 5 to 6 foot deep hole.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Other than that, Don, you had a few other discussion items on the next three slides, I believe, maybe four.
Well, these are more FYI. I don't know if, we can run through it real quick. These are just other areas where side obscuring fences come into play. Solar fields, cell tower sites for that equipment at grade that does say block. We do have a section about side obscuring fences for parking now for five vehicles, but only if they're close, really close to another structure. That doesn't come into play very often. Next slide real quick, Kent. We have side obscuring language for outdoor storage. That's industrial and commercial zones. And then we have this junkyard one that requires a 6-foot side obscuring fence. These are just other areas where that comes into play. I think most of these are pretty obvious for, obscuring junk and broken down vehicles and whatnot. I think that's the end of the presentation.
Okay.
And that's in all zones?
Commercial, industrial.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the only other thing that was not in the, I guess, these slides that we listed, I think, on the public notice is like a discussion item was related to, and sorry, Chair, this part won't take long, but there was a couple that came to Board of Adjustments a month or two ago about their concern was they had a difference in grade between their property and their neighbor's property. And so standing on their front porch, they can see the floor, like the bottom of their neighbor's front porch, right? Even over their sight obscuring fence, just because of the grade difference. Sometimes you can go in and backfill that and change the base of your fence in order to kind of cheat that up. Sometimes you can't. And so just kind of as a discussion item, as we're looking at this, could we maybe entertain the possibility? My understanding is that if a fence is more than 7 feet above grade, it has to have a building permit and inspection, so it has to be engineered a certain way and everything. But if someone wanted to go higher than that, one of the ways I kind of envisioned writing that into ordinance is if you have, as long as it's not against the public right-of-way or in the public utility easement, if it's just separating two properties, there's a grade difference between the two, you can go 6 feet up from the structural grade of the lower property, not to exceed 10 feet in overall height. So for some of those that have these grade differentials, they could add some height to those fences without running afoul of the ordinance. And I don't know if staff or if anyone else would have an objection to that.
Don, may I ask a clarifying question?
Yeah. It may, you know, my ears aren't that good. So did you say outdoor storage units have to have sight obscuring fence?
No. What your storage units are fine. It's the idea is sight obscuring or enclosure. Storage units are enclosed. So that would not impact your storage units.
So it'd be like a storage yard type of thing. Is
yeah, I mean, if you're a contractor and you've got debris, you know, you're a pick-apart junkyard, that sort of thing is supposed to be.
I think we should probably narrow that because the best sanitizer is sunlight, and when it comes to security, when you have somebody creeping around behind closed walls, they could do a lot more damage when our police department can't see inside that fence if they choose to have it a non. And I could see around junkyards, I can understand that type of stuff, but for general storage, you want as much light as possible for the to keep people from vandalizing or breaking into those things. I mean, we have an ordinance in our city, I think it's in our downtown area at least, you can't have more than so much signage blocking your windows and so forth for that exact reason. So if someone, our police can see in if there's something.
I mean, that's something we could chew on down the road.
Yeah.
Typically, we've enforced this, you know, on auto body repair, things like that.
Yeah,
that's where it's and obviously going to be probably a visual impact. That's where we look.
Yeah.
You know, if you're selling propane refills, we're not chasing you.
Yeah.
Right. On the height of the fencing and the retaining. So the way we've interpreted this is that you can retain on your side. We don't limit it to 6 feet. You'll see that everywhere. And then you could go 6 feet on top of that. Even in the front yards, we've kind of read it in its entirety, and you do see large retaining walls in front yards all over the place. And to me, it can be a concern. We don't really have a grading ordinance, you know, that controls, you know, the height. You can grade up 10 feet and then put your building up now, right? So that does cause some conflict sometimes, you know, with neighbors and privacy. And then it becomes an issue, especially when you in your side setbacks where things get closer together. And I think that's maybe where this was. I wasn't at that meeting, but... when you start to go too tall, at what point is that impact, right? It's kind of accepted in most any town USA that 6 feet is kind of that middle ground where we don't start blocking light and ventilation or causing someone's narrow side yard to remain wet, you know, for all summer long or whatever the case may be. So I haven't put a whole lot of thought into that. I'm not quite sure where we should go to where we can kind of meet in the middle or, you know, is there triggers, so to speak, when we should go higher? Sometimes two neighbors may say, great, but we can't really use that. My understanding is we can't do that if two neighbors agree to basically give a de facto variance. So I don't know. Where is that line in the sand? I don't have a real good answer, and I haven't put a lot of thought into it. My experience is when people want to change that grade to mitigate those impacts I'm talking about, other cities will do or require some tiering to happen. So if you want to come up, let's say, 6 feet in your side yard, and maybe your neighbor's house is 5 feet, so we don't bury them behind a 12-foot wall, that's fine. If you want to do an additional 6 feet, you got to bring that back 6 feet.
Well, so you keep
a daylight plane on those really tall fences. That, I mean, that's one solution I've seen.
Couldn't they do that anyway? I mean, theoretically, if they have, if there's a 6-foot fence on the downhill side, you could come off that fence 6 inches and build another 6-foot fence, and there's nothing stopping that. Right. I mean,
correct. And that was why the Board of Adjustments denied the variance on this one, is they saw multiple other routes around it that would have complied with ordinance or an ordinance change. In their case, the only thing that would have met their requirement, 6 feet literally was like ground level on the other side.
Right, right.
There was a 6 to 10 foot gap, so they didn't get to cheat like this and say my ground is higher. They needed at least 10 feet to get any of the privacy they wanted.
And I think that that's part of that difference too, is this, these were the people on the lower side,
yes,
right, that were asking for, can we be in a bowl?
Yes.
You know, can we?
Yeah.
So it's like.
But they didn't start with a fence that was designed to go 10 feet. And so that was also, I think, part of the concern is you took a masonry wall that was designed to be 6. And I'm assuming for decorative purposes, the bricks weren't totally straight. I'm hoping for decorative purposes. And then they wanted to add 4 more feet onto that. And I'll tell you, most of us were terrified about what you had mentioned earlier, Tyler, is it falling over.
Right.
So that was part of our concern. And, yeah, you can shift ground. You can move it around. We told them then, it was like, our basis is where we measure is based on where the dirt is, not where God put it. Mm. You can easily move the dirt to then meet the requirements.
Right.
So yeah. I look at it and say anything more than 7 feet is going to cause a lot more issues for the building department. 6 foot is very standard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's worth going through this for everybody who might have a neighbor who's higher up than them. The other one is you've got all your natural fences, your shrubbery, your trees, whatever
right.
else that could serve the exact same purpose.
Yeah, and we're building a house right now that we're the upper side, but we look straight into someone else's backyard. We're going to plant trees, and that's going to be our fix, you know.
And then every 2-story house is the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You get a 16-foot wall so they can't see down from the second story. I mean, I don't know if you can ever guarantee somebody complete privacy without 20-foot walls.
Yeah. And again, I also think, you know, that issue had come up before some of the material changes. I think where the permitted materials change. Now, for this particular situation, I think their CC&Rs require masonry. Depending on where in the CC&R, sometimes it's masonry fences, sometimes it's masonry feces, but... you know, that was just a spell check issue, I think. But
does it say that in there?
Yeah, yeah, it did. Not in here. In the CC&R for these folks that had the issue. But
so I was going to apologize.
No.
I mean, I at least just from my angle, I think it would cause some legal and some additional work for planning and zoning,
mm-hmm.
and building it specifically if we change the fence height from what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you what some cities do is they'll control the height of your building from the average grade of your lot.
Yeah.
Which mitigates the guy here and the guy way up here. But that's another control.
Right.
Right? And it's a more complicated control to implement on the regulatory side for sure.
Right, yeah. So they, anyway, I do think, I guess what I was getting at with that is I think if you open up the materials too, then those savings in using a different material could be used to boost the berm height or something else as well. So there's, you know, it's all about options. The more options you have, the more the easier it is to make things pencil. So,
how about if you don't like being in a bowl, you don't buy there? And how about if someone looks in your backyard, you put blinds up?
Yeah.
How about the city get out of trying to fence and make people so they have privacy? I mean, this is ridiculous almost. I mean, really.
We're not telling anybody to build those fences that we're talking about.
Yeah.
All right.
Like, so well, what I would situation, then move or do something on your own. I mean, I don't think we have a solution to that problem. Or that we ever should have a solution to that problem.
I guess to sum up, if it seems that there's some more discussion on some of this language and a few things, but it seemed like if we could get maybe with some of the other issues tabled, if we could maybe get a kind of a heads up or down on the definition of site obscuring fence and whether to expand that, And also to allow those same options in PUDs.
Okay. All right. So this is a public hearing. I'm going to open the public hearing. Jonathan, if you get up, I will punch you in the mouth.
Notice how he didn't threaten you, Amber.
Nope. Nope. Just another engineer speaks at this meeting. I might lose it. All right. Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing. All right. Bringing that back to the commission.
We need to bring, I apologize. We need to bring pizza.
So just as a straw poll, I'm willing to use to allow other materials to be used and not just to do masonry. That's and that's kind of the question you're asking, right, Tyler?
And I second.
Yes. So
and I completely agree.
So we'd like to turn that into a motion. So item number 7 is the changing the definition of a set of obscuring effects to include the vinyl.
Yes.
Okay, so
I make a motion to change the obscurity fence from masonry to vinyl.
Are you saying vinyl or the proposed language?
The proposed language. The other materials.
Because that would include vinyl, but it would also include wood slats and other
and masonry
correct.
And,
soon-to-be-invented correct. Materials.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so we have a motion for a positive recommendation. Do we have a second?
I second it.
Very good. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Item number 8, this is a ordinance text amendment to pertaining to the fence material and requirement. Which one was this 45 minutes ago? All right. So this one needs edits from Randall. I'm going to propose that we table this item pending the edits from Randall.
Yeah, I second that.
All right. So we will table item number 8. Do we need a vote on tabling things?
Procedurally, you typically do, yes.
Okay. All in favor? We got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Aye.
Can I make a clarifying request? Are we tabling this to a date certain, or do you want us to bring this back? And some of these, if you want them back, I think
this can be away from us, the better.
It'll take staff at least.
Why have to hear about fences in 2 weeks?
At least until Christmas.
All right.
We're slow.
Is our second meeting in July, July 15th? I don't want to add to July 1st, if we can help it.
Okay.
July 3rd?
So we table it for a month or 2 weeks?
We're going to table this item.
To July 15th?
To July 15th. Our next meeting is June 17th.
Okay.
Well, we're asking for more than just one meeting. Right?
Okay, so then the first or the 15th?
For more than one meeting.
So let me get clarification. Tyler, is this going to limit or obstruct your project if we table this?
Item number 8 was as a courtesy on our part. We don't care how long it takes.
Okay.
So,
all right.
If it's and I think and I'm happy to still spend time working on this with
okay.
Dawn.
Just want to make sure stop holding.
I think
a project.
Later July. The item number 9 is the only other one that would hold us up.
Okay.
All right. So,
yeah.
All right. So your options are the 17th. Of this month, the 1st of next, or the 15th of next? Where are we tabling this to?
You good with the 15th of July, Don?
I think well, some of these I could whip out pretty quick between the three of us here.
Okay.
Some of the other ones, like the retaining walls and stuff, I think that, in my opinion, it takes a lot more
time. Let's just do it all 17th of July. Or, sorry, 15th of July.
Okay.
Yeah, the second meeting of July.
All right. So we're going to move. Okay. Everybody good with that? All right. Item number 9, this is the public or the ordinance text amendment pertaining to the exceptions to fence requirements for the planned unit developments.
So we would ask for, if you would be inclined, a vote on whether to strike the language restricting it to only masonry and composite in PUDs, but then to leave the exception language tabled until the second meeting of July.
I make a positive recommendation based on what?
On the proposed language.
On the
first meeting in July, I won't be here.
That's exactly why I'm pushing for the 15th. It's going to be hard around.
But if we could put this on the next, but approve it tonight. I'll make a positive recommendation to approve the language that Tyler just read, or the requests that Tyler just.
I think it's a strategy. You guys just wear us down, and we're just like, whatever you want.
Move this to city council and leave us alone. Yeah. No, I'm just teasing.
Right?
For the record, Utah is a fence-in state, and county. Some county ordinances require fence out, just so you know.
Okay.
So let me clarify on that motion. So the motion is to strike masonry or composite. That's what would go to council. The subsection B would be tabled so that I can tweak the language.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Correct. Second.
All right. So that's the motion. And
she seconded.
Yeah. Well, isn't it your motion, Jennifer? You can't second your motion.
No.
I seconded.
Oh, sorry. That's Tom's motion. Yeah. All right. I'm sorry. I'm losing it. All right. So Tom's motion, Jennifer's second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Item number 10, the engineering standard revision pertaining to allowed fence types.
I guess my only question would be for staff, would this create a subdivision issue if the engineering standard doesn't perfectly match the zoning ordinance at the time of approval?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't even know Fiberon was in there.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird one.
Which is like a Trex. So I don't remember where or why that happened.
Yeah, I think if you're going to try and make a motion on 4.6.1, it would just be to make it match the ordinance.
Consistent. That would be easy.
And then we will make sure when we bring it to council it uses the same language.
Okay.
So is this going to allow people to use just a chain link fence for the drainage?
That's the next one.
That's the next
one. This one is just the engineering standard detailing, kind of referencing back to the definition of site obscuring fence.
Oh, okay.
But there's a conflict between the two.
Okay. So I didn't get a point. I heard you ask that question, but I didn't hear a response.
I think it needs to match.
If it was consistent with ordinance, that would be much better, in my opinion.
So our ask then would be that the Planning Commission would favorably recommend that staff reconcile this provision with the first one that was recommended to go to council.
Is this going to affect, slow you down at all?
If it doesn't match, it could. That was the question I had.
Do we have any issue with it matching? All right. The engineer says we should make it match. So I'm going to make a motion that we make this section match the rest of the ordinances.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. Number 11. This is to the storm drainage pertaining to fences around detention basins.
And from what I heard earlier, it's not going to hurt us the way it's written now as long as the other stuff all matches. So if the commission wanted to table this item to be worked on with the other items, I wouldn't be opposed to that.
I'd make a motion that we table it to go with the others. Then we can have a discussion about it. A two-hour discussion.
Yeah. we need to have a thorough discussion of what is barbed wire. Okay. The history of barbed wire.
Flesh ripping.
All right. We have a motion. I second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Mr. Melling.
Thank you all for your patience.
Have a good evening. All right.
Jonathan,
we have one city item.
Called, went you home immediately.
We have one city item. This is creating a power easement on city property. Mr. Stathis.
Jonathan Stathis, City Engineering Department. So as you may know, we're working on a project to install a new filtration facility at the wastewater treatment plant. And this will improve the wastewater to what we call a type 1 effluent, which will allow the wastewater to be used on parks, the golf course. And so eventually we'd like to bring the wastewater back into town, use it on city facilities and then others who may want to tie into the city's secondary.
30 years behind schedule.
Yeah, it should have been done a long time ago.
Yeah.
But we're moving forward with it. The project's coming along quite nicely. So as part of the project, of course, we need to run power to the new building. Rocky Mountain Power serves the existing facility, and so they need to extend their line over to the new building.
Right.
Rocky Mountain Power requires an easement, even though this is city-owned property, but
they always require an easement so they can go off to that if it's closer to go to somewhere else, right?
Yeah, so they require it, and it'll be a 15-foot wide easement. It's approximately 400 feet long. The conduit's actually already been installed. It's been surveyed, so everything's ready to go.
Perfect.
So this just needs to have a planning commission vote, and then it'll go to city council for.
I make a positive recommendation.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Didn't even let you get the last word out. My stomach is telling me I got to eat.
You can have that too.
Thank you, everyone. We appreciate your time.